The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Wednesday edition of a numbers game here on VSiN. Matt Brown in for Gil Alexander. Kelly Bidlin on the desk with me as always. We'll have Jonathan Von Tobel a little bit later to talk to NBA. We'll have Will Hill join us. He'll talk some NBA. He'll talk some Major League Baseball and maybe some other sport somewhere along the way as well with Will Hill. We will recap everything we saw last night and give you our thoughts as we move forward with everything. Going to hit some NFL topics today as well, specifically NFL MVP. Long tease, if it paid off, if you were here yesterday, long tease paid off. We're going to talk NFL MVP market, a ticket in my account that I love a ton, price still available. So we'll talk about that as well. As I'm watching these games last night and you see the Celtics go at it, and I get it, the shiny new toy, Anthony Edwards, and I get that we're watching this Timberwolves team that's going in and has really put it to the defending champions in the Nuggets. But you're sitting there watching the Celtics and you start to realize, yeah, I get it. They don't have the shiny new toy. It seems like they almost old hat, old news at this point. And then they start hitting threes and you realize this team is unbeatable if they hit threes. And you watch this Celtics team as they start to prove to everyone yet again. They show everyone yet again, oh, by the way, don't forget about us. Don't forget that we are very, very good and very, very talented. And they go out and they hit 18 threes last night. They win the offensive rebounding game 2-1, and what that allows them to do is hoist up more threes. Yes, if you look at just the percentages, you're going to say, oh, well, that didn't blow me away. They put up over 40 threes. They made 18 of them. But the fact of the matter is if you make 18 threes on the course of a game, it is going to be really tough for another team to compete with you. And that is what we saw last night in this Celtics squad. I think we slept just a little bit on how good that this Celtics team actually is because of what the Wolves have done so far. And Kelly, you go in and you look, 18 threes for the Celtics. You get 32 from Brown. You get 25 from White. Pritchard chips in 16 off the bench. Tatum doesn't even have to be not only the primary scorer, he didn't even have to be the secondary scorer in this game. And not only do they win convincingly, very, very easy over the Cavaliers. And I'm not taking away anything that the Wolves have done so far. They've been incredibly impressive in what they've been able to do against Jamal Murray and Jokic and the defending champions. That being said, it seems like we almost forgot how good this Celtics team is.
Yeah, they're just rolling. They're just rolling right now, and that could maybe be applied to both teams who won last night. They are just rolling. This is
25-point victory, by the way. If you didn't catch, 25-point victory last night for the Celtics.
Yeah, and you talked about the rebounding. I mean, they out-rebounded them 55-38. Like, it was gross. You have guards running around grabbing offensive boards, no problem on the Boston side of things. And it is where Cleveland's missing Jared Allen for sure. Like, there, that is definitely a aspect of the game that he would help with. Does that mean that his insertion into the lineup is going to lead to wins in this series? I don't really know about that. I think it's a lot of, if you've been high on this Boston team all year, this, you saw last night a lot of what you've been seeing all year round. Like you said, you're getting contributions from elsewhere. Tatum doesn't even have to have a big game, and usually it's him or Brown to kind of go back
only
and forth.
Get to the line 14 times, but it doesn't matter. They make 12 of the 14, but they put up 46 threes in the game, and this is what the Celtics do. They put up a ton of threes. And when they offensive rebound like they did last night, again, 2-1 offensive rebounds comparatively to what the Cavs were able to do, it allows them to put up even more threes, Kelly. And so, yeah, I mean, 39%, still nice, but, like, you're not blown away by that percentage. But the fact of the matter is it's a volume thing with the Celtics. They are going to put up a ton of threes, and so long as they are not just ice cold, if they're making it at a 39% clip, it's going to be very hard to compete with this team. As we mentioned, Brown goes for 32. He was 4 of 6 from deep. White goes for 25. He was 7 of 12 from deep. Tatum missed every single one of his threes. It didn't matter because the other guys and the contributions that they put in here. One of the bets that we did get in on yesterday, Kelly, that kind of cruised home despite the fact that he did hit the bench early because it was a blowout. Donovan Mitchell, as we said, 2 AT, Kelly. So he's going to put up 25 shots.
Yep.
He put up 25 shots. I mean, like, it's going to, the volume of Donovan Mitchell's going to be there. That point prop at 27.5, we were just blown away that it was so incredibly low. He goes for 33. But the fact of the matter is, we said this heading into this. Drew said this heading into this. Everybody we've talked to said they are just outgunned in this series, and they are outgunned a ton. There's only Donovan Mitchell on the Cavs side of things that can do anything. In 37 minutes, he produced 33 points, and they still lose by 25, if that tells you anything of how outmatched they are in this series.
It's exactly what it's probably going to look like the whole series. He's going to get up his shots, though. I liked that bet. Love that you brought that up yesterday. That number seemed low. Just got just looking at the numbers now. Got posted again. 29.5 is what we're up
to. They weren't letting people get away with that again.
I texted you, though, man. I think I'm betting this over till they post in the 30s. Until it's 30.5 or 31.5, I'll be going back to it because it's just the volume of shots, man. It's going to be there every single night.
He's the only one that can consistently score. Yep. So he has to do it. Like, yep. I mean, in this, again, this was 25 shots up in 37 minutes. Like, he hit the bench. Like, if this game is even somewhat competitive, he's into the 40s in the minutes. It's just, you know, there was no reason to run him out there for any longer than it was. And so I think that's something we can kind of target moving forward here. They double up the point spread, obviously. It goes off 12.5. They win by 25. Kelly, I mean, we knew this wasn't going to be a series. We were trying to say you could talk yourself around in circles as how the Cavs might pull this off. I think this proves what we were saying. This is not going to happen. Do you take anything? I guess the biggest question for us now is bettors, though. Do we take anything away from this series with the Celtics moving forward? Because, again, it's just not very much competition for them.
Yeah, no, I don't really think that you can. I really don't. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of condition the Knicks, if it's the Knicks. The Knicks.
Yeah.
But, if it's the Pacers, I think it's going to be another cruise job anyways. But the Knicks might be in a situation where, Mitchell Robinson's going to miss the game tonight. Like, they're depleted. Bojan Bogdanović is out for them for the rest of the postseason here. They're kind of losing guys. And we keep gushing about the Nova 3 and everything like that. But if these guys can't keep playing those number of minutes at that high level of basketball, the Eastern Conference Finals might not even be all that exciting. Yeah. Their first test might be when they get in the NBA Finals, where there are some very good teams in the Western Conference.
Yes. No, absolutely. I look at the Celtic team last night, and I was as guilty of as anyone else. You get wrapped up in what you see with the athleticism of Anthony Edwards. You get wrapped up in the fact that defense smothered the defending champions, can't get anything going. I'm like, we just get wrapped up in the Wolves, and then you see the Celtics last night, and you go, oh yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, they're really good.
I
mean, it's absurd when you just see the starting five that are on the court, and then you think about, okay, Kristaps Porzingis is not there.
Yeah.
I'm like, Derek White is so good. Does anybody understand how good Derek White is? I don't think people do. On both sides of the ball, and he's getting better somehow every year.
Yeah, I don't even get it. Like, he's somehow still getting better. Yeah, it's
I'm not going to say he's the best player on the team, Matt, because I think I might catch a lot of incoming for that. He's the most consistent, consistent good player
night
on
in,
the
night
team,
out.
Though.
Yeah. Yeah. Night in, night out. No doubt about that. And then, unfortunately, if you were hoping that you would get a better game in the nightcap, you didn't. 117-95 Thunder over the Mavericks. And you get 20 from Kyrie. He shoots 50% from the field. He's 3 or 4 from three, but, that wasn't good enough. You sit there and you look at Luka, only goes for 19. He was 6 of 19 from the field. He struggled from 3, 1 of 8 from 3 for Luka, had 5 turnovers as well in this one. And Kelly, I'll admit, this one did shock. Like, the game one, I'm kind of like, yeah, this is going to plan. This one kind of did shock me. And it's not that I didn't think the Thunder could win the game. Certainly, that was in the realm of possibilities as we're talking through all this. I just didn't think we would be looking at a complete one-way traffic. And it seemed like every time the Mavs would put together a tiny little run, they'd get within 5-6. It's right back out to 9-10. Mm-hmm. Get within 5-6, right back out to 9-10. This Thunder's team never, ever, ever relented, kept the pressure on the entire time. You get 29 from SGA. And with all that, you get, chip in for 18 from Holmgren, 18 from Williams. The bench comes in. Wiggins gives you 16. I mean, there's just... This team, I'm not writing this series off. I think the Mavs can still hang, but boy, you see a Thunder team play like that as complete as they did last night, and you're like, wow, that is also a pretty good basketball
team. I think the most impressive part about that game last night is you keep watching some of these teams especially these teams that go deeper during the regular season, like the Thunder do, into their bench. And it's okay, postseason, you're gonna tighten up rotations, shorten the bench. How are these guys gonna handle it? This is how the Thunder have won all season long, is by relying on more than five guys. So it's to see those contributions. Jalen Williams, Wiggins, both of them were huge off the bench last night. It's not something that's weird for the Thunder, and that's going to keep being their go-to.
Nine guys, Kelly, that played 15 minutes or more.
Yeah.
Nine guys played 15 minutes or more.
And that's how they're going to play. I mean, I think the scary part is, Shea, you listed the numbers. I thought Shea looked a little rusty in the first half. He was missing mid-range shots that I've seen him hit, like, are basically automatic for him at this point. So the fact that he could even had a better game is a little scary to me. And then look, Luka's battling, man. He's battling through the knee, I don't know if he aggravated something else last night.
Slow, doesn't he?
I mean, he looks like me out there running up basketball
court.
That's not a good thing.
And like, you can tell, like, the 1 of 8 tells it in the 3 too. Like, there's no lift to the shot. There's no whatever. It's just
front rim and everything. It's just leaving it short. And then like Kyrie picked things up a bit, but he started off really slow too. Because so the beginning of the game, it was kind of where the Mavericks going. It was good to see. Now, if you're a Mavericks backer like me, it was good to see Tim Hardaway Jr. get back out there and play 17 minutes. Because I think for someone holding futures tickets, it's been okay. If Kyrie and Luka aren't both having a great game, some of these games are going to be tough to win later on in the playoffs when you don't really have another scorer to look at. So, Tim Hardaway, good to see him back on the court. Need to get him back in the flow a little bit.
It didn't change the outcome of the game. The Mavs were also 68% from the free throw line.
Yeah.
Got to do better than that as well. Lots of free hockey last night. The Rangers, 4-3. Winners in double overtime. They take a 2-0 lead over the Hurricanes. Avalanche win 4-3 in overtime. Take a 1-0 series lead on the Stars as well. You got all the free hockey last night as well for all of the fans. We'll get into some news a little bit later in the show, but next, JBT joins us. We'll see what he thinks. Are these series over, Kelly?
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Wednesday edition of a numbers game here on VSiN. Matt Brown in for Gil Alexander. Spent the entire first segment there recapping the NBA, but Kelly, it is the playoffs, and we have to continue talking the NBA with our senior NBA analyst, also host every single weeknight here of VSiN Primetime, Jonathan Von Tobel. JBT, how you doing, buddy?
I'm very excited about the way these playoffs are shaping up.
Are you now? I mean, let's be honest. Are you really excited about how this is going?
As somebody who's holding a Timberwolves 30-1 Western Conference ticket, very much so. Multiple series bets off, very good starts. So yes, no, I do enjoy the way that we have started out this the second round of the postseason.
Well, I'm glad that you were able to join us here on the Progressive Guest Line this morning to talk some NBA as we try to break down. Let's start with what we saw last night, and then we can talk about stuff moving forward. But I was making the point to Kelly. You kind of listen to all the hype, and rightfully so. The Timberwolves have really, really exceeded, I think, even the highest of expectations for everybody so far through these first couple of games. We see all the, you know, shiny new toys that are out there on the court. It's easy to get wrapped up in all of that hype, and then you watch the Celtics last night just go out and absolutely trounce the Cavs, which was expected. I mean, it was 12.5-point spread, but they made it look easy. And I think we've kind of slept a little bit on just exactly how good this Celtics team, especially when they're dropping threes, and they made 18 of them last night.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are to a certain extent because, as you kind of mentioned, right, this is the expectation. I mean, they're over $3 favorites to win the Eastern Conference at this point right now. You know, they're getting these lesser opponents in these first two rounds. And frankly, the Eastern Conference is falling perfectly for them, right? The Knicks lose Mitchell Robinson yesterday for 6 to 8 weeks. They should still win that series against Indiana, but you're going to get a team that's probably going to have a 6-man rotation by the time you get to the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, so the expectations there, and it's kind of ho-hum. I was just talking about this with somebody. What I'm going to be interested in is if they make it to the NBA Finals and we finally get to see this team play competitive basketball, Matt, is that going to be a negative for that team, right? That they've just kind of trounced through an Eastern Conference, haven't been tested. Remember the last 2 years when they have failed in crunch time. Like, they have not been a good crunch time offense. It has been very poor in terms of their clutch time net rating. And if you're not playing any clutch games for like 2 months, how is that going to look when the time you get to the NBA Finals? But I think overall, I think you are right. Like, we've expected this of Boston. The point spread, the market expects this of them. And we've kind of forgotten how good it is. And especially because you're watching Minnesota not only do what they're doing, but doing it in a deeper conference against opponents, Phoenix and Denver, that the market generally had better expectations for.
So then we get into the late game last night, and everyone expecting, okay, well, at least we might get a good one here. That ends up not being the case. The 117-95 victory for the Thunder. And you know, you look at Luka, 6 of 19, 1 of 8 from deep. He's, you know, misses 4 free throws, 6 of 10 from the line, all the stuff like that with him, 5 turnovers. We knew he was banged up a little bit here, JVT, but, man, watching that last night, it was almost tough to watch because you could just tell, like, he's slow. He's lumbering out there. It's like, I don't want to say he looks like a Joe Schmo, an average guy, because he's still Luka Doncic, but he doesn't look anything. He doesn't look like the special dude, you know, that we know Luka is. And if that's the case, the Mavs just have no shot in this, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And he doesn't really, like, he had one kind of really fluid step back throughout the game, but like, even his step back doesn't look as quick and as fluid and pristine as he usually does. I think everything you've talked about, right? There was a point where he takes the knee brace off and they're just kind of like looking at it. What's going on? Like, there's just so much going on here with that knee. And I would say too, and I wrote about this yesterday and we've talked about it a couple of times, man, I think the underrated aspect of that series is that Maxi Kleber is not available. Mm-hmm. You know, he was their small ball center. When he was on the floor against the Clippers, they had an offensive rating when he was at center of 150.9. You know, he was awesome for what they wanted to do. And he gives you some versatility because you can play him at power forward. You can play your two bigs. You can still have shooting and spacing. It's so much that he can do for that team. And yet now, not only is he not out there, but your best player is now injured and beleaguered with injury. And now all of a sudden you're looking around and going, well, we're not killing this team on the glass like we should. And then our best guy, who, by the way, already has to fight through Lou Dort, Jalen Williams, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, all three of those guys being very good on-ball defenders. It seems like a really big ask for this Dallas team right now. So I don't think they're going to get swept. I think they still have plenty of competitive nature. Daniel Gafford's very good. Kyrie Irving looks incredible. I think they're good enough to make this a series in general. But I think overall, when you're talking about over the course of a best of seven, if this is the way that Luka Doncic is going to look, you know, I bet the Thunder before the series started, I feel somewhat confident in my position here that they're going to be able to win this series.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and look at tonight. Pacers and Knicks currently sitting 4.5 in favor of the Knicks at home, 220 the total. If you think the Pacers win this thing outright, plus 154. Can the Pacers win this series, or, I mean, even this game against the Knicks with Halliburton no-showing? I mean, I understand that he had the injury. He hasn't looked the same since, but we're talking like almost a complete no-show in game one, JBT. And, you know, it's like you get as much as you can from everybody else on the court, and it still wasn't good enough. And so if Halliburton can't step it up, then what more can the Pacers offer?
No, I would agree with that. And that's the part that sucks, right? Because the other part is they don't play well defensively. The Knicks had an offensive rating of over 120 in that game one win. So even though it was tight, you again as a team just cannot get stops. So when we're talking about, again, crunch time, if you get into those minutes, are you going to be able to get stops consistently? No, you're not. And so I think that's part of the big problem. You mentioned it. Since he suffered that injury, Tyrese Halliburton's a 30% three-point shooter. He hasn't been effective in terms of scoring at all, well under 20 points a game. We saw that again. You know, if he's not going to show up, are you going to get some of these, I will call them, you know, not outlier, but strong shooting performances from everybody else like they did in game one to make that a tight contest? And I think that's a little bit of a problem. And the other part, too, going back to the defense is, outside of maybe trying Pascal Siakam, Matt, they got nobody for Jalen Brunson. They got nobody. Like, he's going to eat them alive. So I think it's going to be kind of hard here. And what I think the strategy would be, though, is without Mitchell Robinson, you better go after Isaiah Hartenstein, like every pick and roll. You got to try to get him into foul trouble. You got to try to get Jericho Sims on the floor or a shorter Precious Achiuwa. That's the way to victory. But I just don't know if you're going to do that consistently enough and if you're going to be able to defend enough.
So let's do a little sports talk radio here early morning on a Wednesday, JVT, and Jamal Murray does not get suspended, just a $100K fine for him for what we thought at the time was only throwing one. They tried to throw two things onto the court. The one just didn't make it. The wind catches the towel. The towel doesn't make it onto the court, but the heat pad does. I got to admit, and this has nothing to do with anything. I don't have any bets in that series as far as like series bets. I don't have any futures. So I'm not saying this from a biased standpoint. Like, I was actually fairly disappointed. I feel like the NBA is doing some kind of special treatment stuff here, because if this happens in the regular season, he is for sure suspended. It's like, just because this is the playoffs and just because we want to try and give the Nuggets a chance to be competitive in this, that this guy can do something again in any other form. And honestly, I'm going to go as far as to say, if this was like the ninth guy on the bench that did this, he would be suspended. But since it's Jamal Murray, he doesn't get suspended. I think I was expecting it. I think maybe you were expecting it. What went on here?
Yeah, in full disclosure, again, like, I've got this Timberwolves ticket, yeah. So maybe I am a little bit biased. I'm completely shocked. I think he should have been suspended. I don't think there's any question about it. Like, this isn't a matter, like, even just like, okay, he threw something harmless onto the floor. No. Like, when you watch that video, that heating pack slides into live action. Mm-hmm. It hit his own teammate's foot. What if Jokic plants his foot on that and slips out, right? What if Karl Anthony Towns plants his foot on that and slips out and gets seriously injured? Like, that's a dangerous thing that he did. We see these guys tweak ankles all the time just by softly stepping on people's feet. What happens if you step on that slip? We were just talking about Tyrese Halliburton. Guys, Tyrese Halliburton got injured because he slipped on a wet spot on the floor, mm-hmm. right? Like, yep. That was a serious injury. What if that happens again here? I am amazed that the NBA did not suspend him, especially after watching. Look, say what you want about Draymond Green. Yeah, he stomped on Domantas Sabonis' chest. Okay. If you're going to suspend him, you suspend Jamal Murray. He could have injured any one of the guys that was out there during live action. And to me, the fact that, Matt, and I'll use your phrase, right, that you wanted to keep your defending champions competitive and not suspend him for a game three on the road is absolutely ridiculous. And you've set a dangerous precedent. Jamal Murray shouldn't be playing on Friday. I don't think there's any question about it.
Yeah, I am shocked. I am shocked.
Me too.
That came down yesterday. It was. I understand it's playoffs. We maybe thought it was going to be a little. I mean, I think during the regular season, this is multiple games.
The fact that after the matter, we see that he tried to do it twice.
Tried. I mean, that's the biggest thing, right? It's the towel throw. So okay, you could maybe justify somebody losing their cool for a minute, but when you go to throw something a second time, you are very clearly intentional. Trying to throw something at a ref onto the court. And as JVT said, like, if someone got hurt, you cannot tell me that this would be the same kind of punishment that would have come down. We would have not seen
Jamal
Murray.
We're being results oriented. Exactly. No one got hurt, so everything's okay. It should not be that.
How about this, guys? You think if it's me in the third row, you think if I'm throwing something out there on the floor, they're letting me watch the rest of that game?
You're never coming back to the stadium.
Yeah.
Right? You're never allowed back
in. You're banned for life. Like, that'd be it. You'd be the guy. You'd be the heat pad guy.
By the way, to put it in perspective, if anybody's wondering, well, $100,000, though, still sounds like a lot. I was trying to run these numbers, and then ESPN did it for me, so I'm going to use theirs. How about that is 24.2% of his game check in the playoffs. Not even a quarter of basketball is what he's got to pay for.
Oh, boy. Well,
I don't want to be too, like, I just say this too. Mm. Like, the officials let a lot get up. Like, the fact that Michael Malone can run out there and get the face of an official during a game, it was absolutely ridiculous what they let go on.
It really is. John, really rooting for you on these futures tickets, buddy, and hopefully they get home and hopefully we get some better basketball games moving forward.
Now let's go T-Wolves. I need it.
When we come back, let's talk a little baseball. Yeah, Kelly, we're going to talk baseball here on this program whenever we come back. I got a couple of futures tickets. Let's do it.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This segment is brought to you by Zyn Nicotine Pouches. Few things are as rewarding as winning the big game, but rewards from America's number one nicotine pouch comes close. Zyn Nicotine Pouches are smoke-free, spit-free, hassle-free, and can be enjoyed anywhere, anytime. Plus, every can earns you points towards 70-plus premium rewards items. Find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Nobody had any idea that I could sound like that whenever it's when it's pre-recorded, you know, I can channel that in my voice, but like, it's just when it's live, I can't do it.
I
got to concentrate.
That's what Matt came in here yesterday morning. He's like, let's just bang these all out now. I'm just going to record them. We'll run them back.
It sounds better when I record them, you know, than it does whenever we do them live. So did that, just channeled that nice bass there.
That's the voice of the legend, Ryan Hunter. Ryan Hunter in Alaska, right?
In Alaska. In Alaska. We're talking about you in Alaska. Well done. It is Matt Brown in for Gil Alexander here on a numbers game on a Wednesday. Spent the first couple segments talking about the NBA, but rightfully so. I mean, this is, you know, as a betting, kind of as a betting event, Kelly, it's been a little bit underwhelming so far. So hopefully we can turn things around again. The game tonight is only a 4.5-point spread. So there is that, but we've had some, you know, it's all the way up to 13.5 now for the Celtics for this next one, probably rightfully so yet again. So I'm hoping we can get get some more competitive stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah, real quick, and we'll talk about more about that game later. That is tonight. It's interesting, man. I've got my big Knicks series bet, so I'll just be stepping back. Yep. I'm not doing anything with the game tonight. There's been some sharp Pacers money coming in, I know. I know some guys that like Pacers side. I think if you're watching that, watch game one, it's a little bit understandable. Now Mitchell Robinson out of the game, too, for the Knicks. JVT talked about a little bit how New York will handle that. I think Hartenstein will be tested, and you're going to see a lot of pressure to Chua. I think you are going to see that tonight. So,
and Tibbs runs his guy. I mean, Tibbs plays his guys. He plays his dudes. Like, I mean, like, it's short bench. You play 40-plus, whatever. I mean, like, so that maybe there's some leg stuff that could be going on here, too. So I can understand it. I can understand it for sure. I'm not going to venture into that, though.
Yeah, no. I'm not going to venture into it. I mean, this Knicks team is – I mean, it's got Heat vibes of last year for sure. It is – They keep firing. They keep hitting everything and when they need to hit it. So I'm not getting in front of them right now.
So let's talk some Major League Baseball. By the way, do have some early games today. So first pitch in a couple hours, actually, in the Angels and Pirates. If you want to get involved in that one, Pirates are a -142 favorite at home over the Angels, and several 1 Eastern first pitches as well. Jays and Phillies, Tigers and Guardians, Mets and Cardinals all coming to you 1 Eastern today as well. Aaron Nola on the hill for the Phillies, who have been very good so far. You look at this Philly squad, and I am I'm pretty impressed with what they're able to do. Now, that being said, Trey Turner has been at least a run score base stealer for them. He's going to miss 6 weeks for them. Is that going to really affect what we've seen so far for this Phillies team? I don't know if it really will when it all comes down to it, but certainly it's not good when Trey Turner's not out there. They are a big -170 favorite over the Toronto Blue Jays. Talked a little bit about them yesterday with Paul Spohr, and it's the fact they just can't hit right now. I mean, the Blue Jays, despite the fact they have names and they've got dudes, they just can't hit. And so we'll see if they can start to turn things around. The Tigers and the Guardians. This is Reese Olson versus Tanner Bibee. -135 for the Guardians at home with Bibee, and Olson is a +114 underdog on the road with the Tigers. If you kind of look at just the surface stats on this, Olson looks much better than Bibee, and then you go into the advanced statistics on this one, and you see if you kind of look at the expected stuff, like what should be coming forward with all this, Bibee's numbers aren't necessarily as bad as we have seen so far, and Olson's numbers are actually a little bit better than what we think we will see kind of moving forward with that. So maybe a little bit of value there on the Guardians at home as short favorites. And then we have the Mets.
We all know Gil will be rooting for the Guardians. Another best record in May. I'm trying to figure out right now where they're at in their May standings. It's weird. It's like normal, you know, ESPN just doesn't want to put specific betting market standings like that up, you know?
So it's one of those things where I think as this becomes maybe something people bet more often, that we will be able to easier find all of this. But yes, it is. It's a dig. I'll put it that way. Like it's a dig. They did lose yesterday 11-7 to the Tigers. And then we have the Mets and the Cardinals. Jose Quintana going for the Mets. Sonny Gray going for the Cardinals. Mets are +140 dogs on the road. Cardinals -166 favorites with Sonny Gray on the hill. Mets at least a little bit interesting as dogs on the road there. Quintana's actually been pretty good so far this year. Cardinals can't hit currently. They had a player, you know, the dugout players only meeting. You know, the players only meeting.
Oh, who did?
The Cardinals already. Cardinals had a players only meeting, and I don't know what
you
do.
Wasn't it the Cubs like day two?
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things in sports right now, because the Bulls had one after the first, I think it was after the first game, which cracked me up this season. And then the Cubs, right? I think they were like after game two.
Now the Cardinals have had their own little players only meeting. And I don't know. What do you say? What do you say in a players only meeting in baseball?
Cause it's kinda like, such a good call. Because
everyone's trying to hit the ball. I mean,
what your job is. Yeah.
It's like, it's not like anyone's dogging it or effort or anything or so like that. It's like, it's just hard to hit a baseball. Like, it's just very hard to hit a baseball, and you can get in a slump trying to hit a baseball. You get in there and you're like, all right, guys, quit swinging at the sliders outside of it. It's like, I didn't think it was going to be a ball. It looked like it was going to be a strike. What do you want me to say? You know, I mean,
how do the pitchers work with that? Are they even involved?
Pitchers are probably
their bullpen.
Throw it harder. Why is your velocity down? You know, he's like,
why is
my arm is broken. Yeah, I have a UCL tear. What do you mean? So yeah, I don't know how the players only meetings go in baseball. We did have one of those with the Cardinals. So one of the games that is at least a little bit interesting, this one's coming to you in the 2:00 Eastern hour, is the Padres and the Cubs. This is Dylan Cease versus Hayden Wisniewski. This is -125 Padres on the road over the Cubs. Cubs +105 at home as dogs. Dylan Cease, since ending up in San Diego, has actually tried to revitalize his career. His velocity is actually up to kind of where it has been over the course of his career after a really, really rough go at it last year. I'm not willing to say that this is going to that this is a great bet, Kelly. But what I am going to say is I did speculate and put a little bit of a Dylan Cease Cy Young ticket into the account. And the reason I did this is because so I think if we see we're literally in only in a few hours. But if we see a really good performance again out of Dylan Cease today, I think that the number that was currently available right now is going to be gone. And so I just wanted to put that in there before we see. Now, he could get shelled today and then the number evaporates. So it's kind of a bet on talent here. But Dylan Cease is a dude that has always had an incredible amount of talent. And then you go and you kind of break down the numbers that he's got going on him. He's got the 13% swinging strike rate right now, which is equal to this really high K rate that he's got going on. He's not walking dudes as much as he did last year when he was really, really struggling. Padres playing a little bit better than I think most people thought with all that. Not that wins matter, because we've at least in baseball, we have gotten past the whole pitcher wins thing, and we're not worried about that anymore. We at least are looking at the stats with all of that. But Dylan Cease is always a guy that's had a super, super high upside, never really lived up to it. Did he figure something out? Was the change of scenery all he needed? All that, who really knows? But did put the Dylan Cease ticket into the account there in what I think is still a pretty wide open NL Cy Young race.
Yeah, that's I was just looking that up. 13 to 1.
Yeah.
I mean, geez, the odds tell you it's wide open, right? I mean, how many guys are you talking short of 20 to 1? 10?
Yeah.
Yeah, 10 guys shorter than 20 to 1 right now, so pretty wide open.
Yeah, so for me, it's kind of like I said, I think that number might go away if he has a really great start today,
so
you know?
We've had this discussion a couple times on the show. With so many of these pitchers going down, do you have any hesitation of firing away even... We were talking about it a few weeks ago, and it was kind of like, hey, this early in the season, maybe it's something you need to be a little bit more mindful of now going forward when we're seeing all these injuries all the time. Something you're concerned about, or no, you would still just fire away?
Injuries are just,
you can't control them.
Yeah. It's just, it's kind of we're gamblers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're gambling. I mean, you know, we're gamblers, we're gambling. It's kind of how I look at that as well. I mean, one of the other bets that I put in a couple of days ago, Bryce Harper for MVP. Over in the NL, I think Ronald Acuna will straighten everything out from a power perspective. It's kind of a weird deal going on with him right now where he hadn't been hitting for a ton of power. That said, this Philadelphia Phillies team is already kind of exceeding expectations. If they're somehow able to hold on to this, what if they could overtake the Braves and actually win that division? A lot of that would have to do with what Bryce Harper has done so far and will do moving forward if that were to play out. And you look at Bryce Harper, one of the things that you start to see with him that might even lead to more. I mean, he's got 9 homers already, and you start to look. I mean, he's not going to steal base anymore, but he's got 28 RBI already. He scored 20 runs for this Phillies team. And then you go in and you see that there is his batting average on balls in play currently is only .282 for reference for Bryce Harper, because he does hit the balls is so hard and all that. Last year, his BABIP, batting average balls in play, was .352. The year before that, .324. The year before that, .359. He's doing this right now, kind of getting unlucky. And so he's still doing all of this, lots of hard contact, 46% hard contact for him right now as well, Kelly. I think that batting average in balls in play increases a little bit more, and we start seeing even some more hits and some more things going on with Bryce Harper. So did stick that in the account.
I like it. I don't know about you. I'm still a believer. I know Shohei's been playing incredible right now, but man, I still think this is the year they'll look to try to give it to someone else.
They might try. That's all I'm going with here. They might actually try. Let's talk some golf when we come back here. Wells Fargo.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you don't already have a DraftKings Sportsbook account, do we have a deal for you? You go in, you download the app, and you make your deposit. But when you make that deposit, use promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N. Make a $5 bet, and we're going to give you $150 instantly in bonus bets. That's all you got to do. Go in, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app, use the promo code VSIN when you make a deposit, bet at least $5, and we're going to give you $150 in bonus bets instantly. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Matt Brown in for Gil Alexander. Numbers game here on a Wednesday. Kelly Bidlin with me, and we're going to have two of the hosts of the award-winning, internationally famous Long Shots podcast here to talk about the Wells Fargo. Oh, that's us, Kelly.
I was like, where are those two at?
That's us.
Where are those guys at? And what awards?
And we have won no awards. And it's probably not internationally famous, but you know, it is what it is. We have people in Canada listen. That's international.
You know, I mean, well, the international, I think, is accurate. Famous might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. We don't have any of that.
International, there's at least a couple.
It is the Wells Fargo Championship. This is an elevated event. There are 69 runners instead of 70. We had a withdrawal. Ludwig Oberg is not going to play in this one, dealing with a little bit of a knee issue. So he's going to sit this one out. So 69 instead of 70 players. Remember that when you go in and you look at the odds that are attached to people's names as we, you know, talk this through, and even if you're going in to make your bets today, this is a limited field. It is a no-cut event, and we are also missing Scotty Scheffler and Ludwig, who, by the way, have been two of the very most consistent players on the tour for the past couple of months. So, Kelly, you see, we've seen Rory at 7-8-1, so that one's not crazy. Yeah. But you go down a little bit further, and it's like, okay, now Wyndham's down to 14. Cantlay, who has not been playing all that great, is at 18. Homa, who, again, has had form up and down, is sitting at 20. So you see these numbers, you're like, man, this is so low on these dudes. Well, there's only 69 guys. It's a no-cut event. We're missing two superstars, so you're just not going to get the numbers in this tournament that you've gotten in the past.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit on the podcast. Encourage everybody to go listen to that for a little bit deeper conversation on the full tournament and stats and odds that we talked about. This really is fascinating. It's fascinating because you remove Scotty Scheffler, right? It is a smaller field, so just as far as what a golf odds board looks like, it's one of the more fascinating ones we've seen in a while because of some of that stuff. And I think it's also a good example of what we've talked about, and what we've talked about a lot this year was struggling, you know, with golf a little bit this year. It's not just the Scheffler factor, right? Mm-hmm. It's the inconsistencies of some of the other guys that we expect to be very good throughout the year, and that has been, you know, Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, you know, up and down seasons throughout.
Victor Hovland.
So, you know, big name guys that even a year ago we would have talked about contending with Scotty Scheffler. They haven't really been around. So you do have some guys, you know, JT, Max Homa with some great history at this tournament, at this course, that's definitely baked into the odds a bit. And I think that makes sense. But just I think this is just a better look at what the landscape of golf is like right now on the PGA Tour.
So we're heading over to North Carolina. This is happening at the Quail Hollow Club. You've seen this course in majors before. It will not play like that. They're going to just be running out two-inch-ish rough in this one. So, Kelly, we take a look at it, and, you know, we have come to the conclusion, and, you know, this is how we kind of went about building our models, how we went about sharpening our player pool here, is the fact that we're going to look at bombers. We're going to look at guys that can poke it out there. There's not a ton, again, of penalty area unless you just are way, way, way wide. And so if we're not worried about dudes hitting it out of 2-inch rough, which I'm not and you're not, then hey, let's get close. Let's get as close to the hole as we can, right? Mm-hmm. Let's have a shorter club in. Let's try and do that. And so that's kind of where I started my process. I know there were some other guys out there that started their process on the approach side of things. And, you know, I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer to that. These are really hard greens to hit. So having a good approach game certainly is a benefit. I'm just going to lean towards, in a course where we're not getting penalized for bombing it out there with so many dudes that can poke it really long these days, that is going to be a major, major, major advantage for them whenever they're playing, you know, when they're playing 8-iron in and other guys are playing 6 and 7 irons. To me, that's where I'm going to be looking.
Yeah, and there's other, you know, there's guys like, you know, Colin Morikawa is probably a good example of a great long iron player who's not exactly far off the tee, right? This is one of those tracks, I think, where it does, you do want to look at the distance because, I mean, it's long. You're going to be hitting driver off the tee, and you're still going to be hitting long approach shots for the most part. Those are definitely the guys that I look to target a little bit this week. As much as, if you are someone who's out there dealing with golf stats like you and I are, almost as much as you're going to see throughout an entire season, as far as me weighting stuff off the tee, you know, as heavier than approach numbers, even though approach always important and still very important at this course.
So for me, like I said, heavily weighted driving distance, off the tee, then kind of approach third, looking at par five scoring, you really got to go after the par fives here. We looked at that long iron play is kind of like 175 to 200. I know some people put in 200 plus. I didn't go that route because I'm trying to simplify my model building these days, as opposed to adding all of these variables. I'm trying to kind of go in and tone it down a little bit. I'm wondering if maybe that has been my bugaboo this year so far. So again, just we're always experimenting, right, with all of this. I did it on long courses, you know, strokes gained on long courses is a very long course for these dudes. And then we said these greens are hard to hit, so I did factor in around the green and scrambling to see, as it was, it's a factor, right?
It's a factor.
Sure. It's like 5% each in the model. So, I mean, it's 10%. It's a tenth of the model for me, but it wasn't super heavily weighted because at the end of the day, if you're hitting the greens, then you're not worried about scrambling or whatever. So it's like, I do want to see certainly who's bad at it and who maybe was really good at it. But with that said, Kelly, I'm focusing more on like guys that are going to get it out there and guys that are more than likely to hit the green with it. And if it goes off, sure, I'll use the tiebreaker of scrambling around the green, but I'm just hoping they don't have to use that part.
Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah. And especially if, what did Wyndham shoot last year? 19 under? I mean, if that's what the winning score is going to be, you can't be missing too many greens, right? So it's, I factored all that stuff in as well. Three putt avoidance, too, a little bit bigger greens, but you don't want guys three putting around here and making bogeys or making pars on some of these par fives that they need to be birdieing. So yeah, definitely something to look at. When you're breaking out stats for this course.
So the interesting thing for me, I went out to 36 rounds because again, like I do want to see what these guys have kind of looked like over the course of now. What we've had is a, you know, a pretty diverse. See, there's been some easy courses, been some super hard courses, been some courses in between. Who's kind of coming in like with that 36 rounds? I told you that guys this on the podcast, and it really did. It was pretty shocking to me that Tony Finau over the last 36 rounds was the guy that was number one in my model, which I would not have guessed that was going to be the case, but it is the case. And Tony Finau comes in number one. And so Tony Finau ends up being an outright for me.
I like it. Yeah, I got him in a matchup. He was, I was a little surprised by some of the results I got back for him as well. I didn't go with an outright play on him, but a matchup for me. I do like Finau this week.
Yeah. And so you mentioned Wyndham Clark, tons of success here and started off. I can't believe it was only a year ago. The most epic golf betting year ever last year. And it's just, it's not gone that way so far this year. Yeah, it's 72-1 last year. Got that one home. But this year, as we mentioned, far, far shorter. But rightfully so. That's the other thing that we said about this. He's playing like the second best golfer on the planet right now.
I mean, I think he's been one of the most mispriced golfers probably over the past 6 months. Just because, I mean, the dude's been winning and he's still... It's amazing how much longer and longer odds you'd find him than some of the premier golfers that are out there. I think this week is a good example. Okay, this is really where he belongs. I thought the odds were pretty accurate for him.
Yeah, so Wyndham Clark.
I really like him, though. Too.
Yeah, got in there. A couple of guys that I'm just playing on feel, Kelly, is Sam Burns and Max Homa. These are dudes. Homa obviously has played tough courses very well, had some success here. Sam Burns is a dude that on courses where you're not getting penalized all that much for being wayward with the driver. We know Sam Burns sometimes can't hit it straight for anything. And like, hey, if he's not going to get penalized with this one, the guy's a birdie maker. And honestly, it's just the number drifted out all the way up to 50-1.
In this tournament, real quick, I mean, there has been guys that have won this thing that have come in with very poor form and some of the premier guys. So I think no shocker if either one of those guys wins at this one.
Last couple outright, Saith Theegala and Akshay Bhatia, both guys. Now, the Bhatia one, I went into detail on this on the podcast. So if you want to listen to that.
Yeah, we're both on both those guys.
The Bhatia play, I talked about how I factored driving distance in there a ton. I did kind of back that off in a version of a model, which then shot him up the deal. Anyway, you can listen to the podcast if you want the full details of that. What ended up on your card?
Yeah, that was, well, Theegala and Bhatia, I'm both of them as well. A little bit, you know, I think still a little bit of shorter of an outright price on Sahith than I was expecting, but did play it. I love Decky again this week. I mean, people listening to the show and podcast probably heard that enough this year, but I love Decky. I thought that number compared to some of the guys that were in the mid-20s was a little long on him. So outrights on Hideki, Sahith Theegala, Matt Fitzpatrick, another number I just thought he drifted a little bit too far. Akshay Batia, top 10 on Xander. That's my favorite bet of the week. I hit that kind of immediately.
Seems like automatic.
Yeah, it's automatic. I mean, 7 of 10 tournaments he's teed it up in. His top 10 is cashed. Top 20 on Hideki. Those are my two biggest bets. Sahith Theegala and Batia, both top 20 plays. Finau over JT and Batia over Russell Henley in tournament matchups.
We'll circle back around towards the end of the show and recap on everything that's in our accounts for the golf tournament. When we come back, we'll talk to Will Hill about NBA, Major League Baseball, and whatever else.